That's all we have time for today on Coast Range Radio. You can hear the rest of this conversation and all of our shows free and ad-free on all podcast apps. Just search for Coast Range Radio. We are an independent, volunteer-run show. You can follow us on Instagram if that's your jam. Please reach out and say hello sometime. Let us know what you think of the show. Our email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Let's make it through this together.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO Fights Back end of year campaign. With help from our community, we exceeded our $75,000 goal and will be able to continue bringing you grassroots, independent community radio.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals such as possums and rabbits, including their needs and ways to help them. Be sure to tune in to That Vegan Show on the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m., right here on KBOO Portland.
The year 2025.
At its very core, drag is art.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Chairman, have you no decency?
We can't be silent now. We must speak up.
It's going to be a hard-won battle, for sure.
We took him to court, and we won.
I like that superstar. That's good.
This opinion is devastating.
Guys, I need you to make me a woman.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Our news wrap crew has taken time off for the holidays, but they'll be back in 2026 on our week of January 12th program. This week and next.
525,600 minutes. 525,000 moments so dear. 525,600 minutes. How do you measure a year?
We continue our review of some of the news and feature stories on This Way Out during the past 12 months.
I'm David Hunt.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 8th, 2025.
$8 million to promote LGBTQI+ in the African nation of Lesotho, which nobody has ever heard of.
U.S. President Donald Trump's State of the Union address was a record-setting, almost two-hour marathon of lies and bizarre claims. Lesotho's leading queer advocacy group was dismayed by Trump's accusation. The People's Matrix spokesperson, Tamposa Motapang, told Agence France-Presse, "We are literally not receiving grants from the U.S. We have no idea of the allocation of $8 million. We do not know who received or is going to receive that money. We do not have such monies or a contract that would even reach a quarter of half of that money." Lesotho's government is not taking this matter lightly, according to Foreign Minister Lejeune Mpojine. He told the French news agency, "We did not expect a head of state to refer to another sovereign nation in such a manner." An official letter of protest will be delivered to the Oval Office, which Lesotho has heard of.
$8 million for making mice transgender. This is real.
Well, no, it's not. This eyebrow-raising claim during Trump's State of the Union address again demonstrated the incompetence of the administration's effort to slash allegedly wasteful spending. In their zeal to erase transgender people from government policy, they targeted a government-funded study involving transgenic mice. Put simply, a transgenic mouse's genes have been modified to better reflect how human tissue reacts. They are invaluable in biomedical research.
Trump crowed about all his anti-trans executive orders and also targeted diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, DEI, derisively describing such efforts as wokeness.
We're getting wokeness out of our schools and out of our military, and it's already out. And it's out of our society. We don't want it. Wokeness is trouble. Wokeness is bad. It's gone. It's gone. And we feel so much better for it, don't we? Don't we feel better?
Do we?
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 15th, 2025.
I first want to start off and say, at its very core, drag is art.
Transgender Representative Zoe Zephyr was eloquent this week when the Montana State House was considering whether to label drag performances inherently sexual.
Drag is a beautiful art. Drag has a deep history in this country, and it is a history that is important to my community. You know, if you are a woman in this body wearing a suit today, you are challenging gender norms that existed long ago. And in some ways, drag does work to challenge those norms.
The proposed legislation would have mandated fines of up to $5,000 per performance and allowed parents or guardians to sue drag performers for allegedly harming their children.
Drag story hours I have been to here in Montana, they are like Disney princesses reading to people. These are spaces where people sit down in libraries and parents elect to bring their children and learn about books and the love of reading, and to hear stories told from members of my community. That is important, and that is beautiful, and I do not think that we should be standing up and saying that this art form, because it's somehow connected to my community, is not allowed.
After listening to Montana Transgender State Representative Zoe Zephyr, 13 Republicans joined all the Democrats to reject House Bill 675. The final tally was 44 in favor and 55 against, with one Republican absent.
Finally, the U.S. House of Representatives Foreign Relations Subcommittee became a battleground against Republican resistance to the existence of transgender people this week.
I now recognize the representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Subcommittee Chair Keith Self kicked off his hearings with an insult to the country's first transgender congressperson, Sarah McBride. McBride swiped back at the Texas congressman's intentional offense. Then, her fellow Democrat and ranking member Bill Keating of Massachusetts stepped in to rebuke Chairman Self.
Ranking Member Keating, also wonderful.
Mr. Chairman, could you repeat your introduction again, please?
Yes, we have set the standard on the floor of the House, and I'm simply...
What is that standard, Mr. Chairman? Would you repeat what you just said when you introduced a duly elected representative from the United States of America, please?
I will. The representative from Delaware, Mr. McBride.
Mr. Chairman, you are out of order. Mr. Chairman, have you no decency? I've come to know you a little bit, but this is not decent.
We will continue this.
You will not continue it with me unless you introduce a duly elected representative the right way.
This hearing is adjourned.
Survivors of the generation that started the LGBTQ+ movement in Australia are like gold, and mining the life story of Peter de Waal is a rich pursuit. Born in the Netherlands, de Waal in the early 1970s was a founding member of the Sydney organization Campaign Against Moral Persecution, or CAMP. He was there for Australia's Stonewall at the first gay and lesbian Mardi Gras, and was still on the front lines for the marriage equality struggle. This Way Out's Barry McKay joined the throng for the March 24th launch of de Waal's amazing memoir, held at Balmain Town Hall, home of the first CAMP events.
So, Peter de Waal, you're having your book launched today.
Indeed.
It's called It Wasn't Dutch Courage. Could you tell me a little bit about your life story?
It's been very long, diverse. There's been lots of ups and downs. I've had lots of childhood traumas because of the war, but I've been able to turn that into courage and resilience, and I've been able to help the community have better lives.
So you were born in The Hague?
Yeah, 1938.
And you came to Australia in the 50s?
1957.
What would be your advice to an international audience?
Stand together, work together, work in solidarity, and let your voices be heard. Silence is not an option. That's what happened in 1930 with the Nazis. There were too many people who kept silent. Later on, they regretted it. So what I'm saying is we can't be silent now. We must speak up.
Peter de Waal, congratulations on the launch of your book.
It's called It Wasn't Dutch Courage.
It Wasn't Dutch Courage by Peter de Waal.
Barry McKay, This Way Out, Sydney, Australia.
Crowds on the steps of the Hall of Justice in Port of Spain, the capital city of Trinidad and Tobago, erupted in cheers on learning that the High Court had struck down the Caribbean nation's archaic anti-gay sodomy statutes. But that was then, April 12, 2018. 7 years later, March 25, 2025, the silence outside the courthouse was deafening. That was the day that a three-judge appeals court panel overturned the High Court ruling, putting the anti-gay laws back on the books. But there's one voice that refuses to be silenced.
It's going to be a hard-fought victory, but I'm going to win. I'm going to win.
That voice belongs to Jason Jones, a biracial, binational, queer activist who sued his home country in 2017, asserting that the colonial-era ban on gay sex violates his constitutional rights to privacy, liberty, and freedom of expression. Jones, who has fought for human rights on two continents for four decades, isn't about to stop now. He's appealing the appellate court decision, and this time the courtroom drama will play out in London before the Judicial Committee of the Privy Council. A ruling in Jones's favor could lead to the decriminalization of same-sex intimacy in other Commonwealth countries, potentially impacting millions of LGBTQ people in former UK colonies.
The thing with the JCPC is that even though they're white, British, and sit in London, when they sit on a matter like this, it's as if they're sitting in Trinidad and Tobago. So it's one thing to say, oh, well, you know, throw our hands up, we have nothing to do, it's a savings clause. But it's another one to condemn LGBTQ plus people to a society that's endemically homophobic using laws that you created. So it's going to be a hard-won battle for sure.
For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry, and I'm Natalie Munoz with NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 26, 2025. They were chanting, "When trans rights are under attack, what do? Fight back." Hundreds of thousands of protesters filled the streets of London to denounce the UK Supreme Court's decision that excludes transgender women from the legal definition of woman. The April 19th emergency demonstration in London's Parliament Square was organized by 24 queer and human rights groups on less than 3 days' notice. Organizers and police officials alike marveled at the size of the crowd that spilled over into St. James Park. Pink, white, and blue trans rights flags waved as passionate pro-trans speakers expressed their anger over the High Court decision. Demonstrations were also held in Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, Sheffield, and Nottingham. Photos of the massive crowds flooded social media. More than 1,000 people also marched through the central square of the Welsh capital of Cardiff. Future actions are planned for cities including Cambridge and Oxford. Protesters also hit the streets in Edinburgh and Glasgow, Scotland, where it all began. A 2018 Scottish law required that at least 50% of board members on public bodies be women. Lower courts had ruled that transgender women with gender recognition certificates declaring them to be female could be considered women for purposes of that law. About 8,500 gender recognition certificates have been issued, according to the Associated Press. The five-judge Supreme Court panel's April 16th decision overturned the previous rulings. It concluded that the legal definition of sex refers only to biological or sex assigned at birth. The High Court essentially rejected the concept of gender identity. Anti-trans forces interpret the ruling to mean that trans women and non-binary people can be blocked from using sex-segregated facilities such as bathrooms and changing rooms. It also implies that female hospital wards and sports could be closed to trans women. However, the Supreme Court insisted that provisions of the Equality Act barring discrimination against transgender people still apply.
More of This Way Out's Queer History of 2025 after this brief but compelling message.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
We'll greet a drag virtuoso violist, hear about a major setback at the U.S. Supreme Court, and review the upcoming season at what used to be the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. As a Queer History of 2025 continues on This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap,
a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 10th, 2025.
Transgender people in the U.S. Armed Services have been on a real roller coaster ride. Trump banned trans troops during his first administration. Then President Joe Biden lifted it. Now, they're at least temporarily banned again. Second Lieutenant Nick Talbot of the U.S. Army Reserve is a lead plaintiff in one of the lawsuits challenging the trans military ban. He used his uniform as a symbol of his courageous stand during an interview with CNN.
I do remember kind of putting this on for the first time, and I was starting to think I was never going to get to wear this, and here I am. And especially now, you know, getting to be a lieutenant and getting to wear my rank, I worked really hard for this. I think that it's just absolutely ridiculous to insinuate that trans folks and trans service members are, you know, going home and trying to pretend to be something that we're not.
Colonel Bree Fram has spent more than two decades in the service, the last 4 years in the U.S. Space Force. She was defiant on Baltimore, Maryland TV station WJZ.
I know at my core what I stand for, and I believe in the ideals of America and the oath that I swore to defend. When that ruling came out, I and thousands of other transgender service members were doing the jobs and the missions that the military has assigned to us. I've served over 22 years in uniform, and if there's one thing I can guarantee, that whether it is in uniform or not, my time of service is not done.
Maine's Democratic Governor Janet Mills got the last laugh this week when the U.S. Department of Agriculture backed down from its threats to defund the state's school lunches program. Mills' confrontation with Donald Trump over her state's laws protecting transgender female athletes went viral in mid-February.
Is Maine here, the governor of Maine?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you not going to comply with it?
I'm complying with state and federal laws.
We are the federal law. So you better comply, because otherwise you're not getting any federal funding.
See you in court.
Well, I did see him in court.
Governor Mills delivered the follow-up at a May 9 press conference.
And on May 2nd, just 1 month after the USDA's letter, the USDA has backed down and they've agreed to stop freezing funds for the school lunch program that feeds 172,000 kids in Maine. And it's good to feel a victory like this. We took them to court, and we won.
Pride Month is upon us, and fear of the Trump administration has led to many venues canceling LGBTQ plus concerts around the U.S. Drag performances and anything even vaguely associated with diversity, equity, and inclusion are the prime targets for censorship. That's what makes a Los Angeles event featuring a RuPaul's Drag Race favorite special. And This Way Out's Brian DeShazer knows it's special for an even more intriguing reason.
Thor G. Thor, drag queen and superstar, welcome to This Way Out.
I like that, superstar. That's good.
So I was in the works, I mean, a year ago or whatever, with a Florida Symphony Orchestra. But because of everything going on with our administration and the bands, they called me and they said, yeah, we're going to have to put this show and this contract on the back burner. And I went, what? And, you know, I was a little, like, I didn't know what was going on. And then I quickly was, like, frustrated. And I looked it up and I talked to a lot of people. And I went, oh, my God, I'm, like, one of those performances. And whether or not you like it, most of these large symphony orchestras are funded by very religious, conservative people that come from money and their foundations. I really just feel like I'm me, and my show is really, really interesting, amazing, funny, a little bit different, a little quirky, with beautiful music and cheeky humor. And I happen to be a man in a dress.
Does it shock you that you've got that reaction, or that you're the victim, I guess, of this kind of legislation?
I think it takes a lot to shock me. I really just keep going. I don't get lost. I don't get upset. I just keep doing it. And I really do feel like just doing my show is the largest act of rebellion that you could possibly do when we have standing ovations and we're sold out anyway. And then I can convince some of the conservative members of the orchestra to be like, this was the best. I'm like, I know. Like, right. I know.
For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
I'm not a mistake. I'm not your verdict. I wasn't born to be judged. I am the voice you were never taught to hear, but it sings, it beats, it shouts, I'm here.
Transgender people got another legal gut punch when the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. The conservative majority handed down its 6-3 ruling on June 18th. Their decision lowered the bar for establishing the constitutionality of Tennessee's ban, and that imperils the rights of young trans patients in the 20 other states with similar laws.
I'm David Hunt. I asked Brad Sears, founding director of the Williams Institute and a longtime legal scholar at the University of California, Los Angeles, to take a deep dive into the court's sometimes tortured reasoning in United States v. Skirmetti.
This opinion is devastating, but it starts with one short, simple sentence that there are 1.6 million transgender people in the United States, and it defines what being transgender means. To me, that seems like a clear rejection of the Trump administration's portrayal of transgender people as either confused or people who are trying to commit fraud on others around them.
In her dissenting opinion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor accused her conservative colleagues of abandoning transgender children and their families to political whims. And she said the decision will do irrevocable damage to the Equal Protection Clause and invite legislatures to engage in discrimination by hiding blatant sex classifications in plain sight. American Civil Liberties Union attorney Chase Strangio, the transgender man who argued the case before the High Court last December, had this reaction. Although this is a painful setback, it does not mean that transgender people and our allies are left with no options to defend our freedom, our health care, or our lives. The court left undisturbed Supreme Court and lower court precedent that other examples of discrimination against transgender people are unlawful. We are determined as ever to fight for the dignity and equality of every transgender person, and we will continue to do so with defiant strength, a restless resolve, and a lasting commitment to our families, our communities, and the freedom we all deserve.
Finally, for an anti-woke schedule that's supposed to be free of drag, the 2025-2026 season at the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts will still feature plenty of men in dresses. President Donald Trump's all-caps rant on his Feeble Truth social platform screamed, "No more drag shows or other anti-American propaganda," when he announced in February that he had fired the board and installed himself as chair. Gay sycophant Rick Grinnell was named as the head of the nation's Washington, D.C. showplace. Trump declared, "Just last year, the Kennedy Center featured drag shows specifically targeting our youth. This will stop." Maybe it escaped the reality TV star's notice, or maybe it's just a classic Trumpian reversal of policy, but here's a taste of the upcoming Kennedy Center season.
"Guys, I need you to make me a woman."
"What?"
"Miranda is hiring a nanny, and I put myself up for the job as a woman, and I have an interview tomorrow."
"What?"
"Guys, please, I'm begging you. Make me a woman. Give it a shot. Come on and give me the best that you've got."
The hit Broadway musical, Mrs. Doubtfire, tells the story of a father posing as a female nanny to spend more time with his children after a divorce. That's not all. The Kennedy Center will also host Monty Python's Spin-A-Lot, with men dressed as women in prominent scenes. Moulin Rouge will be performed, including a drag queen character named Baby Doll. Someone will take the role of Chicago's Mama Morton, made famous by queer icon Queen Latifah and drag queen Jinx Monsoon. Chicago character Mary Sunshine is revealed to be male in one of the show's most memorable scenes. So, maybe just a few more drag shows, Mr. President. I'm Ava Davis.
A Queer History of 2025 concludes next time on This Way Out. Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions, Inc. Greg Gordon produced this week's Queerest News of 2025 feature with archival news and feature reporters David Hunt, Melanie Keller, Tanya Kane Perry, Michael LeBeau, Barry McKay, John Dowry V, Brian DeShazer, and Ava Davis. You heard music by the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, No Greater Time Collective, Thorgy Thor, and Eric Burchard, along with excerpts from Camelot, Mrs. Doubtfire the Musical, and Chicago. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Steve Sims of Seattle, Washington, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. The happiest of holidays, and thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KTAL Las Cruces, New Mexico, WODU Norfolk, Virginia, hey Norfolk, 2MIA Griffith, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
Hey, this is Dr. Demento, and you are listening to the KBOO News, the only news you need.
Year 2025.
Pan America tracked over 10,000 cases of books being banned across the country.
I played in the AFL for 10 years for the West Coast Eagles, and I'm a bisexual man.
These programs prey on vulnerable parents. They must know they don't work.
I'm a left-wing dyke, and I love it.
I'm sort of thrilled that People magazine bestowed this honor on someone who can really cherish the value of a sexy man.
Are we ready to make history?
Happy New Year, and welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. News Wrap, the summary of LGBTQ news from around the world, and our cherished volunteer anchors will return from the holiday break next week. This week, we conclude our review of some of the news and features heard on This Way Out in 2025, including the reauthorization of the UN's Queer Expert, escalating hate-filled book bans in the U.S., and the Australian Football League welcoming its first openly queer player. Part 3 concludes This Way Out's Queer History of 2025.
I'm David Hunt. For all its work as a peacekeeping body, the United Nations has something in common with military organizations, a love of acronyms. One acronym you'll hear over and over is IESOGI. IE is short for Independent Expert. SOGI, S-O-G-I, is short for Sexual Orientation and Gender Identity. At the UN, IESOGI is a man, South African scholar Graham Reed, and a mandate, a position created under the UN's Special Procedures Mechanism to ensure, monitor, advise, and publicly report on matters related to human rights violations based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The council created the three-year position in 2016 and renewed it twice, in 2019 and again in 2021. This week's vote, to renew the mandate for another 3 years, comes at a fraught time for the global LGBTQ movement. Fabiana Label is a program manager at the International Service for Human Rights in Geneva, an organization that supports human rights defenders around the world through training, activism, research, and legal advice.
This time around, we have what we call a technical rollover, which is basically a very short resolution that just states what the mandate is and then asks for the renewal. There are a number of grounds on which this is objected, from kind of religious claims around religious practices, claims around cultural norms and family values, which are absolutely not in conformity with UN human rights standards. There are many different claims, but they come from a place of intolerance and a place of discrimination against sexual orientation and diverse sexual orientation and gender identities. The resolution doesn't create any rights, doesn't propose any new language. It's basically the continuation of the work of the independent expert. We expect a close vote. I'll be there when
you, I'll be there when you need me. This just in, the Human Rights Council renewed the mandate of the independent expert on sexual orientation and gender identity on July 7th. There were 29 votes in favor of adopting the resolution, with 15 voting against and 3 abstentions.
Stop banning our books!
That's right!
Stop banning our books! Stop banning our books!
We're a literary organization, we're a free expression organization, and we got into this work of tracking book bans in large part because we understood that if we were going to be an organization of writer members, of writers, if we were protecting their freedom to write, we also needed to protect the freedom to read and the freedom to learn and the freedom to teach.
You're listening to Allison Lee, the Managing Director for PEN America Los Angeles. And for This Way Out, I'm Jason Jen. PEN is an international literary club and community that's been in existence for over 100 years, with some original members like Radcliffe Hall, E.M. Forster, H.G. Wells, Willa Cather, Eugene O'Neill, and Robert Frost. Its main charter states that literature knows no frontiers and must remain common currency among people in spite of political or international upheavals. So they have a lot to say about current government censorship.
Since 2021, we have been tracking this explosive rise in book banning across the country. It is not incidental. It is not just a group of concerned parents here or there. It is a concerted effort that is well funded by groups that have their roots in white supremacy and Christian nationalism. It is now, you know, the explosiveness that we see in book bans last year in the 2023-2024 school year, PEN America tracked over 10,000 cases of books being banned across the country. I know it's a shocking number. And while like the biggest offenders of that might be in states like Florida and Iowa, they happen in every state across the country. State legislatures are now involved in it, but also it now has the seal of the highest office in the land, with executive orders coming down almost immediately from the Trump presidency when they said, you know, book bans are a hoax. We are now seeing the Department of Education dismantling of K-12 education. We're seeing, you know, we're seeing the ripple effects happen across, not just in K-12 education, but we're seeing words being removed from websites, the federal government. And so this is not just about education. This is not just about books. This is about a revamping of our public education system. This is about whose stories get to be told, what history we learn, and, you know, really the marginalization of LGBTQ voices, of Black voices, of women's voices, about stories, about who we are, who we want to be, And, you know, it's just not something that is acceptable in a democratic society.
Thank you to Allison Lee from PEN America Los Angeles for joining us to discuss their viewpoints on this important subject. For more information about banned books or PEN America, you can visit the organization online at pen.org.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 30th, 2025.
You are the people that protect America, and America needs to see that you are the people that protect America, and we are going to be your loudest advocates.
Dr. Dimitri Daskalakis was cheered as a hero when he departed the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention along with other CDC leaders who resigned on August 27th. The bold gay immunization and respiratory diseases official most recently led the U.S. response to Mpox. His confrontational style drives the far right crazy with his prolific pentagram tattoos, leather gear, and suggestive thirst-trapped social media posts. Now, he's another casualty of President Donald Trump's war on science and truth. Daskalakis and his compatriots walked out on the heels of the administration's attempt to fire CDC Director Susan Menares. She's resisting. Her lawyers point to her refusal to rubber stamp what they called unscientific, reckless directives from Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. In his blistering resignation letter, Dr. Daskalakis said in part, "After much contemplation and reflection on recent developments and perspectives brought to light by Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I find that the views he and his staff have shared challenge my ability to continue in my current role at the agency and in the service of the health of the American people." He called out the agency for radical non-transparency, unskilled manipulation of data, and charged his bosses with being people of dubious intent and more dubious scientific rigor. His resignation letter went on to cite, "The recklessness of the administration in their efforts to erase transgender populations, cease critical domestic and international HIV programming, and terminate key research to support equity as part of my decision." Dr. Daskalakis told The Advocate, "I gave up my job as a red flag. This is a five-alarm fire. If people don't act now, ideology will fully consume science."
I played in the AFL for 10 years for the West Coast Eagles, and I'm a bisexual man.
Former Perth-based West Coast Eagles defender Mitch Brown shook up the sport this week by coming out as bi in the Daily Aus. He says the pressure of hiding his sexuality contributed to his decision to retire in 2016 at the age of 28. No former or current male player has ever publicly identified as gay or bi in the league's 129-year history. Toxic masculinity continues to prevail. A highly offensive homophobic slur against an opponent got high-profile player Isaac Rankin suspended for several matches in June, essentially ending his season. Brown declined to condemn the insult.
On the field, you're trying to beat your opponent, right? One of the ways you do that is to belittle your opponent.
His former Eagles teammates were enthusiastic in their support, writing in a social media post, "We love you, Mitch. We're proud of you and how you're living your values to make footy and our society a better place."
Something I did, was it something?
came from Kansas with a sound that shook, or should I say rocked, contemporary Christian music in the late 1990s. Breathtaking in her honesty, at times raucous, hell-bent, she said, on pounding her guitar into splinters. At other times, serene, singing with the simple joy and simple faith of a new believer. A fresh, strong female voice in an industry that had fixed ideas about a woman's place in society. Jennifer Knapp challenged those conventions and carved out her own space, eventually, outside the insular world of Christian music. Today she's out, proud, and sometimes loud, writing and performing for a new generation of fans, with songs that speak to the joys and trials of modern life, of love, longing, loss, and a recurring theme for Knapp, freedom.
In my blood, the son of a Kansas guy. Turn the Flint Hills gold.
Jennifer Knapp isn't in Kansas anymore. At the height of her success as a Christian rocker, she found the pressures and pace too much for her sanity or her soul. In 2002, she packed up her guitars and moved to Oz, Australia, to clear her head and nourish her heart. She found the courage to return to the United States 7 years later. Still a rocker, still a Christian, but no longer part of the contemporary Christian music scene.
When they talk about that record and the songs from that record, most of what people share with me are the stories of their lives.
Jennifer Knapp is a Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter, author, speaker, and founder of Inside Out Faith, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advocating for LGBTQ rights within faith communities. Learn more about her music and her writings at jenniferknapp.com. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
You can reminisce, but you can bring it back. Oh, we'll find our dreams littered on the path. Try something new.
More of This Way Out's Queer History of 2025 after this brief message of gratitude. Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The U.S. Supreme Court considers bans on conversion therapy, the Netherlands elects its first openly gay prime minister, and Professor Pomona Sprout celebrates her wokeness. As a Queer History of 2025 wraps up on This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
And that's the truth.
Please do stay tuned.
Conversion therapy is on trial in the United States Supreme Court, which could quash bans against the discredited practice in more than two dozen states. I'm Marcos Najera. The American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Psychiatric Association, and literally every professional medical and mental health organization in the country condemns the claim that sexual orientation and gender identity can be changed through counseling and prayer. The United Nations has compared it to torture. However, the High Court heard oral arguments on October 7th in a case that defends conversion therapy on free speech grounds. The specific case involves a Christian licensed therapist backed by the notoriously anti-queer legal assault team, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Kaylee Childs counsels clients seeking what she calls religiously informed care that comports with traditional biblical understandings of sexuality and gender. Her lawyers argue that a 2019 Colorado law known as the Prohibit Conversion Therapy for a Minor Act violates her First Amendment rights. The law prohibits and prescribes disciplinary action for what it defines as efforts to change an individual's sexual orientation, including efforts to change behaviors or gender expressions, or to eliminate or reduce sexual or romantic attraction or feelings toward individuals of the same sex. In addition to Colorado, similar bans now stand in more than 24 other states, Puerto Rico, and the District of Columbia. To most observers, the majority of the justices seem to favor Chiles' claims that the conversion therapy ban restricts her religious and free speech rights. Far-right Justice Samuel Alito flatly called the ban blatant viewpoint discrimination. Justice Clarence Thomas doubled down, suggesting that the ban might be a prior restraint on speech. Colorado Solicitor General Shannon Stevenson defended her state's law. She argued that it protects minors from harmful and discredited practices, that it regulates professional conduct, not speech. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson agreed, seeing the law as consistent with a state's traditional authority to oversee medical practices. Several scholars cited by Chiles' Alliance Defending Freedom lawyers have complained that their research on conversion therapy was deliberately misrepresented as supporting the practice. Linda Robinson's 20-year-old son Ryan killed himself after enduring years of conversion therapy. Her story is part of an amicus brief filed by parents of several young conversion therapy victims. Her heartbreaking words on MSNBC have gone viral.
This is not a left or right issue. This is an issue of parents loving their kids and wanting to keep them safe. It was always sold as a way to make a child whole and holy, and yet it did the opposite. It completely broke Ryan's confidence. When we taught Ryan to hate his sexuality, we were teaching him to hate himself. These programs prey on vulnerable parents, and they promise things they must know they don't work.
The Supreme Court's decision in Chiles versus Salazar is expected to be announced in late June 2026.
Morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Professor.
Welcome to Greenhouse 3 second years. Now gather round, everyone. Today we're going to repot mandrakes.
If Professor Pomona Sprout is known for her emphatic morning greetings in the Harry Potter movie franchise, 84-year-old British actress and national treasure Miriam Margolyes is known for waking up her fans in other ways. As she explained to Irish TV's The Late Late Show host Patrick Keeley.
You have described yourself as unapologetically woke.
I am. I'm a left-wing dyke. And I love it. I love being a lesbian. I'm not going to apologize for that.
Where does the fun come from?
The fun in being a lesbian?
or generally in life.
I'm Joe Bainline.
Rob Yetton's Yes We Can campaign is set to make him the youngest ever and first out gay prime minister of the Netherlands. I'm Red. His socially progressive, economically centrist Democrat 66 party gained 17 seats in parliament, clobbering the far-right Party for Freedom. It's led by the man called the Dutch Trump, current PM Geert Wilders, whose party lost 11 seats. Sexuality did not play a major role in the 38-year-old's campaign. Instead, Yetten successfully expanded the voter base of the party, founded in 1966, by hammering Wilder for his divisive, anti-Muslim, and anti-immigrant policies. The October 29th election was also seen as a test of a slow swing to the right, evidenced elsewhere in Europe. Yetten told English-speaking press on election night,
"This is an historic election result because we've shown not only to the Netherlands but also to the world that it is possible to beat populist and extreme right movements, and I'm very eager to cooperate with other parties to start an ambitious coalition as soon as possible."
Before a crowd of his cheering supporters, Yetten proclaimed,
"Miljoenen Nederlanders hebben vandaag de bladzijde.
Millions of Dutch people today turned a page and said farewell to the politics of negativity, of hate, of endless no we can't.
to former Defense Minister Kajsa Ollengren, Jetten is, without a doubt, one of the most talented politicians the Netherlands has ever had, as she told The Independent.
Voters in Virginia, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, California, Georgia, New York City, and elsewhere in the U.S. strongly rejected the politics of President Donald Trump in off-year elections. Democrats won many more state legislature and gubernatorial victories than expected on November 4th. Virginians had two options for first woman governor. Abigail Spanberger clobbered Black Republican Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earl Sears, whose campaign focused on hate-filled ads targeting transgender people. Mikey Sherrill defeated Trump-endorsed Republican former state lawmaker Jack Cittarelli to keep New Jersey's governorship in Democratic hands. Both Spanberger and Sherrill have strongly supported LGBTQ equality. 34-year-old unabashed Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani created a national political earthquake with his overwhelming election to be New York City's youngest mayor in more than a century. He'll be the city's first Muslim and first immigrant Indian American leader. Affordability was the winning word in his election. Mamdani notably campaigned in all boroughs of the city, including areas thought to be hostile to his candidacy. His strong allyship made him a queer community favorite, and the weekend before the vote, he made several surprise appearances at queer venues. One of them was Poppy Juice, an art collective that affirms and celebrates the lives of queer and trans people of color.
Are we ready to beat Andrew Cuomo?
Yeah!
Are we ready to win a city we can afford?
Yeah!
Are we ready to make history?
Yeah!
Let's go out there and do it. Thank you, my friends.
All three Democrats on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court were retained by wide margins. Their control of the state's high court is seen as a guard against future Trump election challenges. Also protecting fair midterm elections next November, voters in California soundly approved the Election Rigging Response Act, or Proposition 50. The resulting congressional district map will favor Democrats in five jurisdictions to counter the Texas government's move to gain five seats favoring Republicans. Democrats have not won statewide constitutional office in deeply red Georgia since 2006. This time, Peter Hubbard and Alicia Johnson were able to oust two Republican incumbents from the state's Public Service Commission, which sets utility rates and promotes renewable energy programs. And the 8,000 people of Dowington, Pennsylvania, elected the state's first openly transgender mayor. Erica Dusso defeated Republican candidate Rich Bryant by the stunning tally of 65% to 35%. She called her victory deeply meaningful and pledged to carry that responsibility with pride and humility. Her online statement went on to say, "I hope it reminds anyone who has ever felt unseen, unheard, or underestimated that your voice matters and that you belong in the room where decisions are made."
Finally, British actor and dancer Jonathan Bailey has become People magazine's first openly gay sexiest man alive. He is perhaps best known for co-starring in Wicked and its upcoming sequel, Wicked for Good. He runs from dinosaurs in Jurassic World Rebirth and runs towards romance in the Netflix show Bridgerton. His stage work includes roles in King Lear with gay icon Sir Ian McKellen. Bailey won the Laurence Olivier Award for Best Actor in a Supporting Role in a Musical for a 2019 gender-bending version of Stephen Sondheim's Company. Bailey came out publicly in 2018 and created the nonprofit Shameless Fund to raise money for queer groups and issues. Bailey's selection was revealed on the November 3rd edition of NBC TV's Late Night, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Like most of his predecessors, he took the honor with tongue firmly in cheek.
In 2025, you just think, I'm sort of thrilled that People magazine have invited someone in to bestow this honor on someone who can really cherish the value of a sexy man.
Yes!
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending November 8th, 2025. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Marcos Nájera. Stay safe.
That's it for This Way Out's Queer History of 2025, and onward with hope and pride into 2026. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Greg Gordon produced this week's Queerest News of 2025 feature with archival news and feature reporters David Hunt, Jason Jen, Michael Taylor Gray, Ava Davis, Marcos Najera, Joe Bainline, Rhett, and Melanie Keller. You heard music by Foster, Joni Leeds, George Michael, Jennifer Knapp, and War. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to the Yavanna Foundation, Addie Gibbons in Oakland, California, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. A happier 2026 to all of us. And thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on WLSL, St. Leo Dade City, Florida, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, KBOO, Corvallis, Albany, Hood River, Oregon, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
New year, new KBOO. Thank you to everyone who contributed and supported us during our KBOO